Imagine for a moment you're standing near a big construction site, you know, the kind with all the machinery rumbling, and right there, smack in the middle, is this incredibly deep hole dug into the earth. It looks, well, pretty intimidating, right? And you can't help but wonder, how on earth do they keep all that dirt, all that soil from just collapsing and dragging down nearby buildings or maybe cutting off power lines? Well, today that's exactly what we're digging into. We're doing a deep dive on excavation support systems. We're going to zero in on one method that's surprisingly common and really reliable, soldier pile and lagging. Our mission basically is to give you a shortcut to help you understand how these things are planned, designed, put in place, and crucially, kept safe. How they ensure safety and keep these huge projects moving forward. Because it's not just about digging, is it? It's about engineering this invisible stability deep underground. Okay, so let's unpack this a bit. To kick things off, let's talk fundamentals. I mean, when you're digging deep, the core challenge is pretty obvious. You need something really strong to hold back literally tons of soil, protect whatever's nearby, and you need to do it fast, on schedule, while meeting all sorts of safety rules. That's where something like soldier pile and lagging really shines, right? As a proven solution.
Exactly. It's a cornerstone, really, in civil engineering. And its beauty is kind of in its simplicity, even though the engineering behind it isn't simple at all. You basically have two main parts working together. Think of it like a skeleton and skin, but for holding back the earth. First up, you've got the soldier piles. These are essentially strong vertical steel beams, usually H-shaped beams. They get driven, or sometimes drilled, deep into the ground at set intervals. They form the main support frame, kind of like the studs you'd find inside a wall.
Okay, the main frame. Got it.
Yep. And then between those piles, you install the lagging panels. These are typically horizontal boards, often timber, especially for temporary work, or sometimes precast concrete panels, which we're seeing more of. Their job is absolutely critical. They sit between the piles and hold back the soil. They prevent it from squeezing through the gaps, you know, basically stopping cave-ins. It's vital for safety, obviously, but also just for the stability of the whole excavation.
Right. So it sounds straightforward, beams and boards. You called it elegantly simple before, but also mentioned the engineering isn't simple. How does this combination provide such strong support, enough to stop big problems like the ground sinking nearby or hitting buried utility lines?
Yeah, that's where the elegant part comes in. The components themselves are basic steel beams, wood, or concrete panels. But how they work together to handle those immense earth pressures, that's quite sophisticated. It's not just about preventing a sudden dramatic collapse. It's also critical for stopping that slow, subtle ground settlement around the excavation, you know, the kind that can crack foundations of nearby buildings or damage roads or even break underground pipes over time.
Ah, okay, the slow creep.
Exactly. And yes, avoiding utility strikes is huge. Hitting a gas main or water line or fiber optic cable, that's not just an oops. It can shut down a project, cost a fortune in repairs and fines, and be incredibly dangerous. So this system is a key defense against those unseen hazards.
That makes sense, the unseen hazards. So it sounds like the prep work, the homework before you even design this thing must be absolutely critical. What kind of deep dive do you need to do on the site itself? What's the essential data you have to gather first?
Oh, absolutely foundational.
Yeah.
This pre-design phase is everything. You have to really get your head around the soil and site conditions. We're talking details here. What kind of soil is it? Is it sticky clay or loose sand? That's its cohesion. What's the groundwater level doing? Are there specific drainage patterns? How close are existing buildings? Or crucially, those buried utilities? We need exact locations.
So you don't hit them.
Precisely. Avoiding strikes and that ground settlement we talked about. You even need to factor in things like weather patterns, seasonal changes, because rain and frost can change soil behavior. And then you need to nail down the load and depth parameters. How deep are we actually digging? What kind of lateral loads, that sideways pressure from the soil, do we expect the wall to handle? This involves working really closely with a geotechnical engineer. They'll analyze the soil data and help determine how deep the piles need to be embedded into the ground below the excavation level and how far apart they should be spaced. Getting this right is key for stability, but also for cost-effectiveness. You don't want to over-engineer it, but you definitely can't under-engineer it. What's fascinating is seeing how these initial checks directly shape the final strength and the budget of the whole system.
That's a really important point about those initial assessments. Can you maybe give an example? Like, how could a small oversight, something missed in that early soil check, really snowball into a big problem later on, affecting the structure or the cost?
Oh, easily. I remember one project where the initial soil borings, the samples they take, they just happened to miss a relatively thin but deep
layer of really soft compressible peat. It was just bad luck where they drilled because we didn't have that specific grain size analysis for that layer. Our first calculation for the pile embedment depth, it was off only by maybe 3 or 4 feet. But finding that out later, after some initial piles were ordered?
Oh, no.
Yeah, it meant a significant redesign. Longer piles, different installation approach in that area. It added weeks to the schedule, and frankly, a lot of unexpected cost. It just highlights how critical that detailed upfront soil investigation is. What you can't see really dictates everything.
Wow, okay. A costly few feet. So let's say you've got all that data. You've hopefully avoided any hidden peat layers and you move into the design phase proper. What are the key choices being made now? What specs are you locking down on paper?
Right. So now you're translating all that site data into concrete plans. For the soldier pile specifications, you're deciding things like the exact size of the steel H-beam, the dimensions of its flanges and web, basically how strong it needs to be based on the loads. You're finalizing that embedment depth, which comes straight from the geotechnical report and those soil tests. And the spacing between piles, typically somewhere between 4 and 8 feet apart, center to center. Oh, and importantly, if the wall's going to be up for a while, you absolutely need to specify corrosion protection. Steel doesn't always play nice with wet soil over the long term.
Makes sense. Keep it from rusting away.
Exactly. Then you've got the lagging panel options. Material choice is big here. Timber lagging, usually hardwood, is often the go-to for temporary excavations because it's, well, cheaper up front. But precast concrete panels are increasingly popular. They're much more durable, you can often reuse them on other jobs, and sometimes they can speed up the installation process. If you've got really heavy loads, you might even consider steel plates, though that's less common.
And how do you decide how close together the lagging panels need to be?
The panel spacing. That depends heavily on the soil type again, and also any surcharge loads. That's extra weight on the ground surface right near the excavation. Could be stacks of materials, heavy equipment, even traffic from a nearby road. Generally, for looser, granular soils, you need the lagging closer together, maybe 2 to 3 feet of vertical spacing between panels to stop the soil flowing through. For more cohesive soils, like clays that stick together better, you might be able to space them a bit wider, maybe up to 4 feet. But the geotechnical report is gospel here. You adjust the spacing based on its recommendations to prevent any unwanted soil movement.
Okay, so timber, concrete, steel. It sounds like there isn't just one best material for lagging. The choice really depends on the job.
Definitely. The trade-offs are significant. There's no single gold standard. Timber's great for cost on short-term projects, and it's easy to cut and fit on site. But, like you said, it's not typically reusable, less durable. Precast concrete,
yeah.
Faster insulation potentially, super durable, reusable, big pluses. But the initial material cost is higher, and you need more precision in planning because, well, you can't just trim it easily on site if something's slightly off.
Right.
And steel plates are really for situations with extreme pressure, maximum strength, but also maximum cost and weight. So yeah, it's a classic engineering balancing act: cost, time, durability, reusability, all tailored to the specific excavation's needs.
Gotcha. So beyond the pure engineering, the steel and concrete, there's this whole other layer, isn't there? The regulations, the safety codes, the permits. It sounds like it could be a real headache, a mountain of paperwork. Is there a common trap projects fall into here? Something people miss even when they're trying to follow the rules?
That's a really important question, yeah. Balancing the engineering with navigating all the regulations, you absolutely have to ensure regulatory compliance. That means meeting all the relevant codes, local, state, federal, specifically for shoring systems, reviewing OSHA requirements thoroughly, getting the right permits, arranging site inspections, a common pitfall. Honestly, sometimes it's underestimating how long the permit process takes or how specific local rules can be. Maybe they assume a standard design is fine, but the local municipality has a specific requirement for, say, tieback anchors above a certain depth, which wasn't in the initial plan.
Ah, the local quirks.
Exactly. So the design might be technically sound, but it hits a regulatory snag. That means delays, potential redesigns, maybe fines. It's not just about ticking boxes. It's about ensuring safety, yes, but also keeping the project on track and avoiding those costly hiccups.
Okay, so the plans are done, approved, materials are selected. Now for the exciting part, actually gending it. What does the installation look like on site? I'm guessing precision is key here. No room for error.
Definitely not. Precision is absolutely paramount. This is where the plan meets the ground. For soldier pile installation, step one is meticulous surveying, marking the exact spot for each pile. Then the heavy equipment moves in. The piles are either driven into the ground using large hammers, or sometimes, especially in dense soil or near sensitive structures, they're installed in pre-drilled holes. They have to go down to the exact depth specified in the design. And crucially, before you start digging out the main excavation, you verify their vertical alignment. Are they perfectly upright?
Because a leaning pile is bad news.
Very bad news. Even a slight tilt at the top can mean it's significantly off position deep down, compromising the whole wall's stability. So getting that initial pile installation right is the foundation for everything that follows.
Right. Once the piles are in and checked.
Then comes the lagging cannel insertion. This happens progressively as the excavation goes deeper. You dig down a bit, then you slide or place the lagging panels horizontally between the flanges of the soldier piles, usually starting from the bottom and working up in lifts. You secure them in place, often with wedges or sometimes brackets, making sure there are no significant gaps where soil could escape. Crews are constantly checking alignment and fit as they go. It's a methodical, step-by-step process. Dig, install lagging, dig, install lagging.
And during all this digging and installing, there's that other invisible factor we touched on, water. What happens if you start hitting groundwater? That must complicate things.
Oh, significantly. Groundwater control is often a major part of the job, especially if you're digging below the natural water table. If you don't manage it, water flowing into the excavation can wash away fine soil particles, destabilize the base, increase the pressure on the lagging, basically turn your nice stable excavation into a muddy, unstable mess.
Not ideal.
Not ideal at all. So you need dewatering strategies. This might involve installing well points, sort of small shallow wells around the perimeter, or maybe deeper wells connected to pumps to draw down the water level locally. Simpler methods might just be sump pumps in the bottom of the pit collecting water that seeps in, along with drainage ditches. Sometimes you might even need to seal the joints between lagging panels with grout to stop water seeping through. Managing groundwater effectively is, well, it's about controlling those powerful unseen forces. Keeping the excavation workable and ensuring the support system itself isn't undermined by water pressure or soil erosion. I remember one site, unexpected heavy rain caused the water table to rise rapidly. Our pumps were suddenly struggling to keep up. It really drove home how dynamic groundwater can be and how quickly it can become your biggest challenge if you're not prepared.
Wow. Okay. Another potential headache. So let's fast forward. The system is built. The main excavation is done. Maybe the permanent structure inside is starting to go up. Is the job for the soldier pile wall finished then? Or is it more of a set it and monitor its kind of deal?
It's definitely not set it and forget it, especially if it's going to be in place for a while. Continuous monitoring of wall behavior is critical. You need a regular inspection schedule. That includes daily visual checks by site personnel. Are there any new cracks? Any signs of bulging in the lagging? Is soil trickling through anywhere? Any unusual seepage? You're looking for any change.
Okay. Visual checks. Anything more technical?
Yes. Often you'll use instrumentation. Things like inclinometers.
Inclinometers. Okay, what are those exactly? What do they measure?
Good question. An inclinometer is basically a very sensitive instrument that measures tilt or lateral movement. You usually install special casing, either within one of the soldier piles or in the ground just behind the wall. Then you periodically lower the inclinometer probe down inside this casing. It gives you incredibly precise readings of whether the wall is tilting or moving sideways, even tiny amounts. That's the lateral displacement. It's like an early warning system. It can detect subtle shifts in the ground or the wall itself, movements you'd never see just by looking, long before they become a serious problem.
So it spots trouble brewing beneath the surface.
Exactly. That consistent monitoring, both visual and with instruments, lets you catch small issues, maybe a bit of unexpected soil pressure in one area, before they can escalate into something requiring major, costly repairs, or worse, a failure. And beyond just watching it, there's maintenance and reinforcement. Depending on how long the wall is up and what's happening on site, you might need to schedule periodic checks or even add support. Maybe install additional anchors or bracing if the loads change, say, if heavier equipment than planned starts working near the edge of the excavation. What's really interesting here is that foresight. Good design anticipates potential changes and includes monitoring protocols. It's about ensuring that stability isn't just achieved, but maintained throughout the project's life.
And thinking about that longer term, are there maybe some economic or even environmental upsides to using a system like this, especially with that careful planning?
There certainly can be. A big one is reusability, particularly with precast concrete lagging panels. If they're installed and removed carefully, they can often be cleaned up, stored, and used again on the next project.
Ah, so you're not just throwing away tons of timber every time?
Yes, yeah. Exactly. That reduces material waste, cuts down on the need to buy new materials for future jobs. So it improves cost efficiency over the long haul, and it's definitely a more sustainable approach compared to single-use timber lagging. And just to quickly recap some practical points for you listening, people often ask how deep these walls can go. Well-engineered ones, easily over 60 feet. Inspection frequency. Daily visual checks are standard, with instrument readings like those inclinometers, maybe monthly, depending on the project's sensitivity. Choosing panels. Timber often wins for short-term jobs or tight budgets. Precast concrete offers that durability and potential for faster install times, plus reuse. And those crucial soil tests needed beforehand, things like soil borings to get samples, grain size analysis to see what the soil's made of, and permeability tests to see how easily water flows through it. All vital for getting the load calculations right.
Right. So this deep dive has really shown, I think, just how much goes into holding back the earth. It's this incredible combination of meticulous planning, really precise engineering, and then that constant vigilance, that monitoring. It's a whole hidden world of engineering beneath our feet.
Absolutely. So next time you walk past a big construction site and see one of those deep excavations, take a moment. You'll now have a much better sense of the unseen engineering, the precision, the planning that's going on just below the surface, keeping everyone safe and preventing those costly surprises. And maybe think about this. How could that same level of detailed, proactive planning, that way of anticipating challenges and monitoring performance, how could that apply to other complex problems, maybe even in your own work or life, completely outside of construction, something to think about?